UEG Talks, gastroenterology to go. Welcome to our GI podcast. Listen for fresh insights and perspectives in science, education, and professional development.
Hello, everyone. My name is Agla, and I'm the host of UEG Talks, educational and hopefully fun dive into GI world and beyond. We're happy to have you with us for another exciting episode. Today, we're talking all things colon, from patient preparation to the future of AI. And for this, we're coming to Italy. And it is my utmost pleasure to introduce today's guest, a megastar in colonic stratosphere, Professor Cesare Hassan. Welcome to UEG Talks, Cesare.
Thanks, Egle. Thanks for having me in this UEG talk. And very happy to reconnect after the huge success of the UEG Week.
We're very, very happy to hear your thoughts and hope to hear some controversial opinions on the colon. So let's start. If an endoscopic universe, there was only one quality indicator for colonoscopy, which would you choose? How should an endoscopist measure and follow his or her progress? And can at some point a person say that, oh, well, I'm good enough?
I feel that the only quality indicator that is very important is the awareness that you should be measured. There is no possibility for any endoscopist to know if you are good or bad if you don't measure yourself. It may be the cecal intubation rate, the quality of prep, it may be the adenomatation rate or the polyblutation rate, whatever it is. If you don't measure, you will never know whether you are good or you're bad.
So should one take care of it himself or herself? Or should it be departments choosing to do quality monitoring?
Yeah, this is a very good point. Despite the measurement is mostly at endoscopist level, we cannot pretend for the endoscopist all what is necessary to measure its own quality, because it would be a duplication of its own work without any incentive. So probably the hospital or the department or the unit should have a system in place to measure quality. For instance, a lot of software of reporting now can give you the cecal intubation rate or the polyblutation rate. Of course, in order to measure the adenomatation rate, you also need the link with the pathology. But in several European countries, the screening center in the FIT program, they have both of the information. So I feel it's very frustrating that in a lot of countries, a lot of endoscopists could know their own level. But I don't know why the screening program do not give feedback to the endoscopist, or the endoscopist do not push enough the screening program in order to have the adenomatation rate. So I agree with you that some system should be in place to measure at least some quality indicators.
All right. And now that we've measured, what should we do if we see that the quality is not good enough? Let's say the fifth worst performing percentile of the department. What do we do? Do we send them for refresher scores, or it's your own business to improve?
Yeah, this is a very good point. The technique is quite complex, so it is impossible to teach how to become a good colonoscopy or a good endoscopist in 2 days. However, there is evidence that a lot of low performers actually are good endoscopists, but only they are not concentrated in colonoscopy. For instance, some endoscopists feel that diminutive polyp are irrelevant and they do not resect. And this is why their adenomatation rate is very low. In these cases, a very short training course may be psychologically helpful, and it may improve low performers. If they persist in their low performance, then maybe it's better to invite them to withdraw for a while from the screening program and to do something else, some more complex retraining, and etc. And then, again, not all endoscopists must be forced to do screening colonoscopy. Maybe they are good in ERCP, EOS, or in IBD, or liver, etc. So at the end, there's no point for a low performer to insist on colonoscopy. There are a lot of more funny things to do in life.
Good point. So colon is not for everybody, and you should not force a person to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can understand people who find it very, very boring.
And also the quality indicators in other areas might be lacking because they are so abundant in colonoscopy, so you might get away with lower results.
Yeah. If you think of upper endoscopy or other. So not all people should do colonoscopy necessarily, especially if they don't like.
Okay, so it's acquired taste. You should love doing it, so you do it well.
Yes, exactly. It may be that a lot of people who do very advanced endoscopy, they don't pay necessary attention to very diminutive adenoma. So even for them, it may be difficult to have a high ADR. In theory, they can have, but then in practice, they fail to achieve. But it's no problem. I mean, everyone can do something different in life.
Well, that's a very liberating position to hear from you. Coming to another point, you're a huge lover of AI, and I was wondering, what's your opinion? Because it's all the hype right now. There is hardly any issue in endoscopy without an article or two about the benefits of AI. So do you think that endoscopists will become obsolete, or AI will be just an adjunct? For instance, in performing colonoscopy in the afternoon when ADR seems to shrink, what do you think is the future?
Yeah, so for a detection of a polyp, it is still a competition. A lot of time, it is you to detect the polyp before the machine. So the machine is not an ever winner. But there is a difference. The machine can evolve by upgrading the training data set. Endoscopists cannot. So in the long term, I feel that at least for detection, also Barrett, gastric cancer, IBD, neoplasia, the machine will dominate on the human. But anyway, the human is still expected to expose the mucosa, is still expected to compensate for a false negative of AI. But I don't feel that we should be scared. It's like the semi-autonomous drive with a Tesla. If a machine can do something better than us, why should we do in instead of the machine? So let's hope that the machine can be much better than us very easily, very quickly. I would be very reassured. Today, for instance, we scoped Barrett with high-grade dysplasia on random biopsy, and we had a lot of problems to find a visible lesion. Maybe AI can do it in 1 second. So why to be scared? It really earn a lot of time for us.
Okay, so you're optimistic about the machines not taking over, but subjugating them for our own purposes.
Yeah, also because human endoscopy still have a very high risk of error. We miss 1 every 3 polyp. We miss 1 every 3 visible lesion in Barrett and probably more in early gastric cancer. We miss probably 70% of dysplasia in IBD if we don't use a Chrome endoscopy. So it should be the opposite. We should really hope that computer can reduce our risk of error. But of course, this also depends on us, because if we don't believe in AI, if we forget to switch on the machine, if we forget to activate the machine, then AI is irrelevant. So I feel that endoscopists should take one moment, should understand that AI is necessary, despite the exam become a bit more confusing, a bit more complex with all of this alert. But these alerts are very useful at the end.
Okay, again, some positivity about the future, us becoming symbiotic with the machines.
Yeah, and also, I know that a lot of endoscopists question whether the machine is good, but very soon it will be the opposite, because the machine itself will be able to monitor our cecal intubation rate, our level of cleansing, our adenoma detection rate. So in a very short time, it will be the machine to evaluate our quality. So it would be the opposite. Are we good enough for the machine? Maybe it would be the machine to say, oh no, Cesare, you are not good enough to do the exam with me.
So much pressure coming up. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of pressure. Yeah, I feel a lot of pressure is coming up.
Okay, but for today, since we're still not judged by the machines, if we aim at perfect optimal colonoscopy, what do you think are the 3 main components to achieve it?
So first, to think 1 second on what bowel prep you are using, because the feeling is that you don't need any more an adequate level of cleansing, but you need a high level of cleansing that is a 3 according to Boston. And there are some laxatives that probably are more effective than others in achieving a high quality cleansing. Then secondly, you need to have a session dedicated to a skin colonoscopy. So it cannot be that you do a variceal bleeding, then there must be an ERCP because the patient must be transferred. And in the 2, you do a skin colonoscopy. You need to have your time. And third, you also need the technology. You said AI, but also a high definition scope, a wide angle of view, maybe some artificial light if you don't have AI. Like, I don't know, it may be LCI, TXI, eye scan, something like that. And then a lot of dedication. You need a lot of dedication.
Well, okay. So to sum up, it's bowel prep, technology, and focus, all combined with the love for colon. All right. So you started about the bowel prep. Mandatory bowel prep split. Should we forsake patients for an all-night torture in the hopes of the best colonoscopy? Do you have any secrets how to prepare, how to schedule so that the patient is comfortable, not exhausted before colonoscopy, especially in patients who are coming from out of the city for the procedure?
Yeah, so first, I tried to disrupt the least possible the day before colonoscopy. So I asked them to take the laxative very late, something like 8:39. So I don't give the first dose in the afternoon, so they can work, they can go back home, they can have a soup, and then can they take the first portion of bowel prep. And then I try to minimize the second dose in the morning. So usually I prefer very low dose bowel prep, or anyway, a low dose. And if they come from very far, I can give the option for the second dose to be taken in the hospital, like in Japan, for instance.
Okay, that's fair enough. I'll try to use it. Maybe it will improve my patient's experience.
Yeah, I think the first dose too early is wrong. It does not help the bowel prep, and it is very fastidious for the patient.
Talking about things going wrong, what do you think is the biggest mistake an endoscopist could make in performing colonoscopy?
So I think the worst mistake in colonoscopy is that most of the endoscopists still don't measure themselves. I know my own ADR mostly by the study where I participate, but I guess that most of the endoscopists in general don't know their own performance level. So I feel that today, as 20 years ago, the very high risk is to downgrade the importance of quality in a colonoscopy. But again, I feel that also the epidemiologists, the hospital, there are a lot of people who are responsible for this.
So again, we're coming back to quality and measuring your own quality and trying to improve it.
Yeah, I feel it also applies to ERCP or to small bowel endoscopy. So it is a general problem of endoscopy.
So first we measure and then we try to improve it. I guess on this positive note, we should end our talk here today, Cesare. It was our utmost pleasure to hear your thoughts and provoking ideas. We'll try to implement some of your suggestions and improve our quality. Thank you so, so much for being here with us.
Thanks, Igle. Thanks all the audience for this talk on skin colonoscopy. And of course, looking forward to meet you at next weekly week. Bye-bye.
Ciao, ciao. See you soon.